But today is VE Day. The war is
the
over.
The newly crowned queen waves from the balcony.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has landed.
Tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Bailey Gifford. Capital at risk.
Hello and welcome back to The Advice Show. This week we're joined by Sean Standerwick of MLP Wealth, based in Banstead in Surrey. Sean, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. No, I'm really looking forward to this.
Yeah, cheers for coming in on what is a bitterly cold day.
It
London
is.
London winter has truly arrived. Sean, your firm is particularly interesting because it was founded by your dad over 40 years ago, and then you and your brother now run it, having taken it over in 2023. Can you tell me a little bit about the business?
Yeah, so as you say, set up about 42 years ago now by my father. Very different back then. You know, he was going around knocking on people's doors, selling them savings products.
Selling them windows.
Yeah, he was one of those men. So that was a long time ago. My brother joined the business. He's older than me, over 20 years ago, and me over 10. But things have really changed. Obviously, the industry's changed. I'm sure we'll get into this. But the business as well, which is obviously so important for any business. You don't evolve. We've seen the businesses that don't, right? Then the business doesn't survive. Been around for a long time. More recently, we moved into a new area, into Banstead. We're only down the road, but we're on a high street in an old bank.
NatWest.
Yeah. So actually, my parents banked there. Yeah. Because actually, we grew up around the corner from there as well. But we call it the banks. We've got a vault room. We've got the old vault room. Yeah. With the safe doors. So it's a real experience coming into the office. And that's something, again, we might touch upon, that I think is really important.
Yeah.
And in today's advice, especially with things like AI, right,
yeah,
that you give them an experience. So, yeah, we're a local business. We're part of the community. We're a team of 10 at the moment, constantly growing. But my brother and I went through an MBO to buy out my father. So that was in 2023. And with that, we've got this real drive to take the business. Now it really is our own, to the next level. And we've got that heritage with.
Does your dad have any impact?
Not anymore. No.
Paolo is your dad, right? Paolo is your dad.
Paolo. So my dad, unfortunately, had a health thing, a prognosis, literally pretty much the day the deal went through. And then also, I think it just kind of got to the point where, what did he want to do? What fitted with the business? And, you know, he's of a certain age where, and he's done his service, right?
Yeah.
What does he really want to do? And then, you know, we had various conversations. And at the same time, for us, with what we wanted to do, I think there was an element also of him thinking, I don't want to hold you guys back.
Yeah.
And so it was quite tricky, I would say.
You mentioned outside that before we came in that you mentioned your brother there, he's been with the business 20 years. Your journey into the business wasn't direct, was it? You went to uni and then you went and worked elsewhere.
Yeah.
Why financial advice ultimately for you?
Why did I end up there? So I never thought I'd work for the family business. I always wanted to do my own thing. I've always been ambitious and wanted to do it on my own. What happened was I got to a point in my job where I was a bit disillusioned, really, in that I was doing a really good job and I was not getting recognized for it. And I had a really bad manager who started giving me a hard time.
Mm.
He, long story short, he wanted his mate's wife to take the job.
Wow.
And he'd done this with other people on the team. And I had people contacting me after I left. So I didn't know what I wanted to do. I thought I wanted to get into investment banking. First of all, I didn't manage to. Second of all, I don't think it was right for me. There was a reason I didn't.
Too many late nights or?
What, for in banking?
Investment.
No, not that. Believe me, I work, you know, hard and I work evenings still. It's not about that. I don't know. Well, one of the things about corporates as well is there's a lot of politics. And I'm someone who's about getting a job done, about your outputs. And sometimes at those places and often it's about being seen to do certain things. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't know what I wanted to do. I knew I wanted to always do something on my own at some point. And at that point, advisors were self-employed within the business. So I thought, well, if I go and do this, I just had a brainwave. I can speak to my dad about it. And it gives me the opportunity to find what I really want to do. And, you know, I spoke to my dad. He just said, well, I don't really have anything to offer you. There is maybe something. I won't pay you anything to start with. We have to see if it works. But within about 3 months, it started working.
Yeah.
And here I am today, taking over the business. So,
how was that transition to working with managers you didn't get on with, your dad and brother?
Yeah, to start with, it was great with working with my dad because he'd had all that experience.
Teach everything, yeah.
Yeah, and I just ask him so many questions. My brother, to start with, is a little bit tricky in some ways because think about...
competitive edge, yeah.
There's that. He was used to working, and at that point, the firm was not working so well, I would say, as a team. You know, there was my dad, my brother's advisor, there was one other advisor, but he kind of did his own thing. So suddenly I come in, different view. I'm obviously family, so I'm very confident when I go in there.
Yeah.
It took a bit of adjustment, but, you know, at the same time, my brother gave me a lot of help. He would give me time. And I'll tell you, when things really changed were when we started negotiating my dad to buy the business. And
so that was in 2021, just after COVID. Yeah.
And the reason, what I've noticed about that is, if you think about it, it makes sense. It's because at that point, your interests are fully aligned. And that's why it's so important when you run a business and you work somewhere that your interests are aligned, right?
Yeah.
Because otherwise, there's going to be a little bit of fighting against each other.
Yeah. And I mean, how to talk us through some of those negotiations. Were they strictly in the office or were they happening at the dinner table at Christmas time?
No, we've... No, they weren't. weren't always necessarily in the office, but it would be a meeting if it wasn't. We try not to. And my mum always, you know, stop talking about work if we ever do. it was very, very difficult, I would say, because I think it's about as hard as it would ever be because you've got that family element. Where you've got emotions involved.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's really difficult as well for someone who's done that for their whole life to suddenly give it up.
Yeah. Did he find it hard to give it up?
Did he?
Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, like there are emotions involved, right? You think it, like my dad wasn't fortunate enough to go to university or anything. He left school when he was 16. He set up the business on his own. Mm. It was his, as a lot of people say, it was his baby.
Yeah.
So to give that up is very difficult. And then you've got the dynamic of a family, your children who you've managed, made it a lot more challenging, but we got there. The advice I suppose I'd give someone if you're going to go through that process, having done it, is just work together as much as possible.
Yeah. You mentioned teamwork a lot, both outside the studio and in the studio now. What have you done that you think has sort of harnessed that teamwork element at MLP Wealth? And I know that you've done quite a lot of work with young people as well.
Yeah, so we've worked really hard on the culture, especially in the last 2 years, but longer than that. So, you know, it started with the smaller things of let's go for a drink on a Friday.
Yeah.
Then we have team socials, you know, whether it's a stand-up. We even went wild swimming a couple of times. Wow. But we do all these different things to then have experiences outside the office and really build relationships. Yeah. And then we have other things, like we've got core values and we talk about them. We have
are some of those core?
Yes, we've got six. I mean, some of maybe the highlights would be collaboration.
Yeah.
So obviously teamwork's within that. Accountability. Client first. Professionalism. I mean, I could go through all of them, but
What do you think? Do you think some firms lack in sort of a lack of accountability?
And specifically in our industry, right?
Yeah, specifically in the industry.
Yeah, I definitely do. I mean, I think what we have in our industry, and obviously this is a very much a generalization, but I think there are lots of, because the average age of an advisor is 59, right? They're thinking of retiring a lot, or they are coming to retire in the next 5 to 10 years.
So maybe they're not so fussed about things like drinks on a Friday, are they?
Exactly. And, you know, if I look at my dad, he was happy to do things, but you get to a point in your life, if you're happy with what you got, whereas when you're younger, you're pushing and like, how can we take this to the next level? And I think for that, because also having taken on advisors or an advisor who's been at other firms, they didn't do socials. If they ever went their Christmas do, they had to pay for it themselves. You know, it was all like that. And I'm not blaming anyone or pointing any fingers, but I think there's a lot more that can be done. And I think people undervalue it.
How has that benefited the business in sort of a material impact in terms of its...
Well, I'll give you an example. A couple of the people who joined us, when they started, you know, one of them said, because we're in office, okay, one of them said, I want to be able to, I don't know if I can be in at that time, or I've got to walk my dog and these kind of things. And the other girl said, I've got a child, that I need to pick up and I can't work later than five. Having now worked in the firm, the one who said that they didn't know if they could be in said they don't want to work from home, because they prefer being in the office. The other person, who was very strict about their hours, now works potentially more than anyone else, other than maybe me or maybe my brother. But they work weekends, they work evenings, because they love it. And because we get on, they love their job, they love working the team, they love helping the clients. And it just makes everyone's job more enjoyable. Makes it easier to give feedback.
Is there a pressure element on some people to work sort of because of the example you and your brother set? Or do you think it's because they enjoy it so much?
I think it's because they enjoy it, especially, I mean, that person I mentioned, one of them, you know, as an administrator, we never say to someone, you have to work. We do have extra hours. We do say, look, we've got high expectations, right? You know, if I think there's obviously been this shift, and we're kind of shifting back to work-life balance, which is great, and that might lead to more happiness. But I think you've got to be realistic. If you want that work-life balance and that's number one priority, then you're going to sacrifice. Whatever you do, if you work all your hours and extra, you're going to sacrifice other things, right? And there is a balance that needs to be had. You need to find what's right for you. But the better you want to do, essentially, you know, the more time and work you need to put in, otherwise someone else would be doing it anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. There's always somebody on the doorstep to take your job. We spoke before again, and you sort of service around 780 clients. Can you tell us a little bit about those clients? I think I understand that the sort of average portfolio size is around 250,000.
Yeah.
Sort of who are the sort of clients that MLP service?
Yeah, and that's changed over time. We've actually, just think about it, I know I told you that number, it's actually over 800, but anyway, we're more or less there.
By the by.
I'm just thinking because there are some other clients elsewhere. So, in terms of, I've lost my trail of thought now.
Sort of who are the type of clients?
High type of clients. Yes, and the size. So yeah, that has changed in that the assets under management for new clients has gone up. We've actually increased our minimum as well.
From what did that go?
So to be honest, we would have taken almost anything. I remember taking on clients for £20,000.
Wow.
Yeah, because it was, when I started, I was just scrapping for business, if I'm honest. We didn't have an ongoing service. We just started it.
Yeah.
So we only had about 20 million on an ongoing service. We now got 240 million roughly.
Yeah.
So that's increased. Yes. So we have people, we've got a client with over 2 million. The change in location into Banstead also helps.
Okay.
Because it's a wealthier area. Now there's a slight caveat here in that I'm big on financial education. You know, children, young people, whoever it is.
Around 570 families, I think.
So we've got 570 families. And that's really important also for the intergenerational thing, right? Because if you've got an aging client bank, you've got to think about how do we keep this going? Plus...
Is yours aging?
So we actually had a look at this. We've got about 45% that are over the age of 65. Yeah. So that is a bit of a concern. I know there are a lot worse than that. But this is where it's really important to try and involve the children, not only from a business point of view, but actually when you have these conversations with clients, they really value it. What if you're not around? What's going to happen to that investment, that pension, all of these things? We should at least know who they are, right? So that they can call us up, have a conversation, we can give them a free review. So yeah, in terms of the client bank, it's kind of changed. It's got the assets under management have got bigger, and obviously the job has changed over the years as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, some of the regulatory changes and pressures, I suppose, there's been RDR, which was sort of as you were coming into the business with a distribution review, and then more recently Consumer Duty.
Yeah.
How did that change your proposition? I hear from quite a lot of firms that they cut quite a lot of clients as a result of that. Did that happen?
Yeah, we haven't ever really cut many clients.
Okay.
I think one of my things my dad actually said was, you don't need to make knee-jerk reactions when regulations change. He said, I've been around long enough to know that there's an initial reaction and then normally things settle down. With RDR, that was a massive change. And it was quite scary. I wasn't in the firm when it actually happened, but I was near where it happened. And I've actually seen most of these things as opportunities, if you think about it. Like, for example, we weren't charging an ongoing fee. We started to. We decided to build portfolios at that point. We were at that part in our journey. And with that, therefore, offer more value, more regular touch points, where before it was not such a regular ongoing service.
Okay. What, less than sort of one touch point a year?
Yeah, back then, yeah, before the ongoing fee. And then, you know, MiFID, I would say, was a big one.
Yeah.
Because then there was that focus on, well, what are you doing for your ongoing fee?
Yeah.
And yeah, look, they give you a headache as a business owner. And I do think there is an element of our industry potentially being overregulated. But I think if I now look back at some of these changes, I see that, you know, we've now got a profession. You know, my dad started off knocking on people's doors, but, you know, he eventually had to get qualified, and he did. But if you've got to get qualified, you've got to have a certain level of knowledge. It's become a profession. You can become chartered.
Do you think it's easier to be an advisor in a bigger firm from a regulatory perspective than it is like yourself and your brother? Do you think the FCA are harder on firms like yourselves for...
I think probably that they're more interested in the bigger firms because they're easier to review.
Yeah.
The difference is when you're a smaller firm, you're more worried.
Yeah.
Because you know that this is going to come out of your pocket, not some big beast in the background.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And so...
You are the CFO.
Yeah. And when we talk to our advisors, you know, they're all very conscientious, as I'm sure most are. But they understand that if something goes wrong and we explain to them that we've got to pay this money, think of it as if this was your, something goes wrong, you got to pay for it. And so people have that accountability.
Keeps the falls off your back, I guess.
Look, overall, I think the introduction of regulation, of course, has been positive. It's become a profession. The level of advice, even since I've been in the industry in the last 10 years, has changed. And what we're doing now versus when we started is massively, we're adding way more value. And we just always think, how can we add more value for our clients?
How what are some of the ways that you've added sort of more value than I suppose they were getting 5 years ago or even longer?
Yeah, I can't think exactly what time it happened, but, you know, originally, of course, there wasn't cash flow forecasting, right? We were in the early days and the industry was more product sales. It's now, what are your objectives? Okay. It's like, yeah, someone might come to you and say, oh, I've got these pensions. And sometimes they say, I probably want to consolidate them. Okay. Yeah. But why? What is it you're looking for? Oh, did you realize you've got an IHT problem and you've got kids? Why have you got 200 grand in cash earning 1%? You know, all of these things. Because if I know what your objectives are, and sometimes I can help you work those out.
Yeah.
Then actually, I can do a much better plan for you, give you really, which is our company goal, financial peace of mind.
Yeah. Yeah. What's your assessment of the industry as a whole? There's obviously a lot of talk at the moment about consolidation. You mentioned there about the average age of advisors. How do you view the advice industry and where do you think it can be in 5 years' time, for instance?
I think it's such an exciting time to be in the industry because the average age of an advisor is aging.
Yeah.
Presents a massive opportunity.
For younger advisors like yourself.
Yeah, younger. I mean, like you say, I'm younger than the average, but, you know, you're younger than, I'm 39. Yeah. You know, you're in your 20s, then again, you've got all this opportunity. What is it? I think it's a quarter to a third of small business owners are 55 plus.
Yeah.
So what does that tell you? You know, we talked about 59. They're going to move on. You know, I came on as someone not thinking I would necessarily carry on as a career. Mm. I know it's a family business, but it was a negotiation.
Not at the Christmas table.
And, you know, now I'm sitting here running a business. Now, that's not for everyone. And I really would say you don't need to be running a business. It will be for some.
What is your what's your biggest learning from running the business that I suppose you hadn't considered before?
Biggest learning, how important people are and how difficult it is managing people. Because you think about it, everyone's unique. You need to adapt to
some people react to one way of managing.
Yeah.
Other people
and you need to improve yourself as a manager in terms of how you're giving that feedback, how you're coming across. You know, it actually, there's a lot of psychology involved, right? You know, maybe I'm a bit weak in this area, or, you know, maybe, you know, you need to really reflect.
How do you and your brother interact? Is good cop, bad cop? What is
I mean, look, we talk about things all the time, and that includes weekends, it includes evenings, whenever it may be, going to each other's office. And by the way, we've got an open door policy for anyone, and we encourage people to come and ask questions. We all lean into our own way we are. And, you know, we often have conversations. I might say, well, you should say this and say this. And we've come up with this thing of, no, that's your way of saying it. We might give each other a bit of advice. Yeah. But when you try and say it, like someone else said, it doesn't come across right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, look, at the end of the day, I've said to you before, we spend most of our time with the people we work with, not our wives, husbands, children, best mates. So we want to enjoy it. So we don't want to be sitting there berating people. We've got to be able to sit down and say to people that you made a mistake here. And we want people to understand why that's important.
Yeah.
Take on the feedback and move on and ask questions. But, you know, if you've got the right people, you can do that in a way where you're not having to be really harsh with them.
You have a big sort of drive towards hiring younger people. Mm. And I understand that you've just started a new scheme where you're looking to bring younger people on. Can you talk us through that a little bit as well?
Yeah, definitely. So first of all, we took on a placement this summer. Mm. So this was an idea by an advisor we brought on. And she just said, why don't, I told her about what we're trying to achieve. And she ran the process then. So all I did, my brother was a bit more involved earlier.
Put the contracts on the table.
Yeah, well, I did the interview, right, when they came into the office. And he's been excellent. You know, he's 20 years old. He was 19 when he started. and it's just really refreshing. I mean, you know, he's our AI champion. So he's testing all the AI and he's coming to me and he's reporting on it. It makes me realize how I'm not that young anymore. but just the way he works and finds things out. We brought someone else on very recently, who had, so he was in twenties, young, early twenties as well, who had a bit of experience, was in Dubai and now has joined us. And you can just see the difference and the keenness. And the moldability.
Yeah.
And there is such that opportunity for them, yet at the same time, there aren't a lot of jobs out there for them.
No. Yeah, well, I mean, that's what we're hearing at the moment. The job market is drying up, isn't it? 5% unemployment now in the UK, so.
Yeah, and it's really challenging as a young person. It's challenging how to separate yourself, right? Because these days, most people have a degree. And, you know...
You said that the guy that you hired is 20. Is that a deliberate effort not to hire grads? Is it, are they going to be sort of...
He's the placement, so he's at university, doing a year. We'll go back, do his final year, and then we might offer him a job, and if he wants to, we'll say I haven't got there yet. Mm. But for us, it's a really good question. So actually, yesterday I popped into the shop next door. We know all the locals in the village. We're very much part of the community. And she was asking, because her son wants to get into finance, what I thought about going to university or getting a job. And I said to her, look, if I had the option of looking at someone who's been at university for 3 years, or they've got 3 years experience, or even one relevant, I would go for that person with the relevant experience.
Why is that? Because you yourself went to university, didn't you?
Yeah. And by the way, I'm not against going to university. And I did also debate whether to go or not.
Okay.
Why is that? Is because it's much more valuable having the experience in the job. Depends what your degree is as well and why you're going there. But, you know, you go to university, you rack up a load of debt, most people, I was fortunate that I didn't. And
yeah,
I didn't
you're
need
pre,
to.
Yeah.
But you do all of that and then you come out with a degree and you look very similar to everyone else. And is it even a relevant degree? So unless you've got a real passion for what you're doing and there's a real reason, I think that many people would be much better off. Even, because I said to this lady, well, look, even if your son takes him a year or two trying some different jobs to work out what he wants to do, that's part of your journey.
Yeah.
Right. And then you can go, right, now I want to try to say it was financial advice. Then I want to go into that industry. And then you know, whereas you come in straight as a grad. I mean, we took on at one point a young person, very good, very intelligent, lovely chap. He then actually decided that I just want to go into the army and I don't really want to be in this industry.
Right.
And so that was completely out of our hands. And that, look, that you've got to take on risks as a business. I'm not saying that's not an issue, not something, a problem in that sense. But for him, you know, he have been better off cutting out some years or just in general? It just gives you an example.
You mentioned your the lad on placement is the AI champion for MRP Wealth. What sort of tech solutions have you guys settled on and what opportunity do you see AI having in the industry as a whole and also for the firm specifically?
Yeah, I mean, AI, right? Big talking subject. It occurred to me that we're just not using it properly.
Can you explain that?
Well, before we had this chap doing this as AI champion, you know, I'm sitting there thinking, why am I not harnessing it? How do I use it? And I don't have time to sit there and test it or maybe even some of the capability.
What AI are you using? ChatGPT?
So, we use ChatGPT. We've come up with, custom ones all the time.
Do you pay for any?
Yeah, we pay for it. Yeah. We've tested a lot of tools. We use Otter AI, one of the things I feel about AI is, it's not quite there yet for a lot of things, and especially in our industry. So you get industry-specific things, and some of them just aren't good enough. Then it suddenly occurred to me, these things aren't working. We're seeing a similar pattern. If I want a note taker, why don't I just go to the best note taker in the world or one of the biggest ones? Because they've probably developed that far more. That's what we did. And now we use that note taker.
Which note taker is
that? It's Otter AI.
Oh, Otter AI, yeah.
Yeah, and we found it very good. Whereas in the other ones, we found far more mistakes. We didn't like the outputs as much.
Have you helped? It's helped productivity and your...
Yeah, definitely. And it's something I asked my advisors about. And they said it saves them a lot of time. It allows them to spend more time with clients, do more client meetings.
Yeah.
We're so big on efficiencies, you know, because... It's easy to get bogged down in things you don't need to, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And sort of investments, what sort of stuff are clients allocated to in your
allocate in terms of asset classes?
Yeah, classes or portfolios.
So look, very much of course depends on your risk level. There is a place for cash, of course, and everyone needs a bit. In terms of the actual investing, look, if you're higher risk, you're going to want a bigger equity exposure. I think it's something like anything over 4-year time horizon. Generally in history, we've seen equities outperform.
Yeah,
it just comes that extra volatility. So, if you need something in the shorter term, and also it depends on you because a lot of people panic. Mm. But generally, we're recommending most of our clients now are in DFMs. I mentioned earlier, we run our own portfolios and we still do. But it got to this point where we were spending so long on that job and it was becoming a real beast. Like we were portfolio managers. And well, if there's someone
else. Second job, isn't it?
Yeah. And then you've got a whole team that's all they do. And they can be more risk controlled with it.
Yeah.
And they've got a bigger range and it's more diversified. It's a better outcome for the clients overall. And yeah, we've seen excellent performance in the portfolios. We've seen periods where it goes down. We always explain that to clients.
How engaged are your clients with sort of their investments and what do you make separately, I suppose, about sort of the government's push to try and get people more into retail investing and sort of instill that American culture? instill that American culture in...
Yeah, varied. Typically people in certainly early times of investing, looking all the time, or if they're nearing retirement, we always explain to them, we show them charts and say, look, this is a drop. It may have taken you 2 or 3 years, 4 years to get back above. So they're expecting those drops when they happen.
Yeah, I suppose that's good. That's financial planning 101, isn't it, in 2025?
Yeah, and it's something my dad actually, I think, probably originally taught me. You know, it's very easy. We're salesmen, there's part of sales in it, but you always want the best outcome for the client. It's not just selling for you, but you've got to make sure that, and I've had clients in where they say, yeah, look, I know it's down. You told me at the very beginning I should expect it to go down, so I'm not worried. I'm like, oh, great.
Nice, yeah. Make my job a lot easier.
Exactly, yeah. But yeah, there's a real mix. So we do like within the DFMs, the better ones tend to have good allocations to alternatives. You know, fixed income's become a really tricky asset class in recent years. And some of those portfolios have been doing better. Those allocations have worked really well.
Yeah.
You know, also cash over the years. I mean, actually at the moment, even though interest rates are a bit higher than they have been historically for, you know, since I've been in the industry, it means you see opportunities elsewhere, right? So the cash holdings generally have come down within portfolios.
Yeah.
And of course, again, if you're up at 10, you don't need to have any portfolio in cash.
And the elephant in the room over the next week, we're recording this on Wednesday, is the budget, which is in a week's time. How are you feeling about that? And how are your clients, more importantly, feeling about it?
Yeah, I mean, me personally, I try not to get too involved with it because, you know, these things happen. Obviously, the sentiment is pretty negative.
Yeah.
I think I was actually listening to Rory Southern talk about this last night as a marketer. About how, you know, tell everyone the worst so that when they do something, it's actually not as bad.
Yes.
Yeah. So I wonder if there's an element of that.
Kite flying, I believe the political term is.
What's it called, sir?
Kite flying.
Ah, okay. Not
heard
sea of
flight. So I think the income tax thing was classic of the genre.
Okay. Yeah, look, the big thing clients have been worried about is tax-free cash. But previous to the rumors on the budget, I've seen since last budget, people have been worried about inheritance tax a lot more. We get a lot more inquiries. We get a lot of inquiries.
Yeah, just on those two things then. Yeah. The tax-free cash, first of all, have you seen more people take it this year than last year? Or have you noticed?
Definitely. I think we've definitely seen more inquiries about it. Yeah. We obviously say to people, look, I mean, obviously I'm not giving advice now, but we say to people, I wouldn't react and do something purely based on speculation.
Yeah.
You know, I've got a few clients who needed the money out anyway.
Yeah.
And they said, let's just move this a bit forwards.
Yeah.
Because they were concerned.
And is that them taking the whole thing or just?
It depends. You know, like for them, these are people, some of these people are reasonably wealthy. They may have been taking out 50 grand of tax-free cash. You know, for someone to cash. So I do have a client who has, you know, the full 268 to be able to take. And, you know, I've said to them, I cannot recommend that you do this based purely on speculation. You've also got an IHT problem.
Yeah.
At this point, it's not in your estate. You've got other money and they need to retire, actually, is the biggest thing for them. Like, this is your retirement pot. You know, I don't know what's going to happen.
Barbados
it pot, could be a bad decision. I don't know, but I certainly cannot recommend you do that.
And then you mentioned their IHT. That's obviously that was the big thing from last year, particularly for this industry. What's your take on that? And what are clients saying to you about that as well?
Yeah, people, I mean, the thing about IHT is it feels really unfair, doesn't it? You've been taxed your whole life, and suddenly to then get taxed in 40% on death, it's not small, right?
The pensions is 20%, to be fair, isn't it? It's got a slight carve out, I think. No, that's the farm, sorry.
No, yeah. So, no, that's another thing. That's a really good point. Like, there's been a lot of talk around agricultural relief, but what about business relief? You know, I run a firm. It's now going to be subject to inheritance tax where it wouldn't have been previously because of the cap, actually. So, it feels really unfair. And I think actually one thing I would say is we need to encourage businesses and business owners. And I feel, you know, you mentioned about the US, you know, what I see across there is the positivity, the pro-business, the try things, the encouragement. And it does feel that we're not that way. And I would like to see more of that because more entrepreneurs, more business owners, more thriving businesses are better for everyone. We pay more tax. We employ people. We're very much part of the local community. You know, we installed a defibrillator. We've got Christmas lights going up next week. We sponsor it. It nearly didn't happen 1 year. You know, the people say to us when they come by our stall, when we're outside the front there, just just handing out drinks just to be part of the community. You know, thank you so much for some of the things you do. Just having a nice window display. We have window displays. So, yeah, I think all of this kind of thing is important. I've slightly transgressed from the IHT piece. Yeah, so people are concerned about it. The good news is there are still things you can do. There's always, you know, look, we're always going to have changes in legislation. All the governments change everything. Doesn't matter which side they are. And it you know, in some ways it presents an opportunity. And we just have to deal with it when it comes, really.
Yeah, and a client's pretty confident in that piece as well, that they're not panicking too much. They're just wait and see. And
well, that's our job, right? It is, you know, we're emotional and we learn about behavioral finance as well when we train up, is to try and keep people calm and just adjust when we need to and change them. That's why these regular reviews now are so important, because it means we keep our clients on track and you're giving that financial peace of mind.
And I mean, Sean, was there anything else that you wanted to touch on? You mentioned about sort of wanting to bring more young people into the industry. Yeah. What can they do to sort of seek you out, perhaps?
Yeah, so look, I'm very active on LinkedIn. Just look me up, Sean Standwick, MLP Wealth. Whether you just want to follow me, connect, that's great. I've had people contact me as well. We're always open to talking to good people. But we give out free financial tips and career tips and behind the scenes as well, MLP Wealth, so you can get an idea what's going on. And look, again, you know, we're on this really, really ambitious growth journey. So any also advisors thinking of retiring, wants a good home for their clients, then
yeah.
Again, we're open to conversations.
You mentioned that there was a firm nearby who you were looking at, you're in conversation with. Can you give us any more details on that?
Yeah, so it's a local firm that, you know, we were put in contact with. We spoke to them, I think, a year ago now. And then they decided actually it just wasn't the right time for them.
Okay. Are they older, looking to exit, looking to
retire?
Yeah,
so in their 60s, just got to the point now where they realise they don't really want to carry on and they want to get out. They do really care about their clients. We speak to a lot of people we have spoken to. Most of them are very worried, or should I say concerned, that it goes to the right people and they get looked after. And that there's that continuity for them as well, and it's a cultural fit. It really needs to be a fit for both of you.
For the clients as well, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, typically, if obviously there's a fit between us and someone else, then it's going to fit them with the clients. But absolutely, they understand. We invite them into the office, they meet the team, that kind of thing. How we operate, we explain all that. Then that should make things, you know, easier. And it takes time, right? I think I said earlier, you know, it took a year and a half with our own dad, and we knew everything about the business. So I don't think it needs to take that long, but it's not something you do over a couple of months.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, Sean, thanks so much for coming in and joining us.
Thank you for having me.
But today is VE Day. The boys
are the crown queen waves from the Belt.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has
tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929. The Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Bailey Gifford. Capital at risk.